Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar, and this is the Red, White, and Rude, where politics is downstream of pop culture, and I break it down for you. Tonight, we're going to talk about three, well, classics and hopefully a future classic. After 30 years in hibernation, we finally get a Beverly Hills Cop release, and that is Axel F. I will talk about it. You also get an opportunity to see another great movie that did not get its due when it first came out in 2016, and that is Warcraft. And finally, there will be a reboot of a cult classic, and that is Highlander. Hello, everybody. This is William Del Pilar once again. Thank you for listening to this podcast or watching it. And as always, hit the like button if you enjoy what I tell you. Tonight, we're not going to delve too much into the politics of movies. I'm just going to talk to you about three good movies that are out there for you to enjoy. And the first one we're going to get into is Beverly Hills Cop. Axel F. I'm not going to review it as much as give you my thoughts about it. You know, it's streaming on Netflix instead of theaters, which is great because I'll be honest, I would not have paid to go see it. Unless it's a big screen type movie, I just no longer care to go out and support Hollywood. It's how I am. The streaming services are killing me as it is now. And just to make a point about that I said was going to happen, eventually streaming movies or streaming services, $5, $10, $15 here or there. Next thing you know, you're going to be paying $60, $70, $80 a month for 4 to 5 streaming services. This is just a new way of cable, you know. But right now, Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. is streaming on Netflix. It's a franchise known for humor, action, as well as Eddie Murphy's iconic performances that he gave us consistently in the 80s and 90s. Now, the Beverly Hills franchise itself has generated $735 million worldwide. The bulk of it came from the first two movies. The third movie was a complete flop, for lack of a better word. And they say Eddie Murphy did not want anything to do with it because he was so upset at the third one. He wanted to make sure this one, the fourth one, was done properly. And after 30 years, I don't think so. What it is, it's an opportunity for an old aging out star to relive 15 minutes of fame. And that's what this movie is, you know. Obviously, I keep saying I'm still new at this, but I'm not really new at this as much as I am slow at this. You know, I like to show pictures of what I'm talking about. This is Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. It's a great cover. It's reminiscent of the covers of the previous movies. You know, so obviously it brings back a lot of memories for somebody like myself who was a kid when I saw it. I wasn't a kid as a teen. I was a young adult. But obviously Eddie Murphy plays Axel F. There's a... let me get over here. There's new characters and as well as old cast. We also have the two. I purposely put this picture out. It's Judge Reinhold and John Ashton as Billy Rosewood and John Taggart. And I'll get into it in a bit, but you can obviously tell they're way too old to be playing active cops anymore, you know. And because of that, you know, they want to bring in new blood. They catch in the new generation. Any smart director, writer, producer, whoever the team that's behind the movie is going to want that. And this is the best pick I could find. It's Bronson Pinchot there plays Serge, as well as Taylor Page plays Jane Saunders, Axel Foley's daughter, and Josh Gordon-Levitt plays Detective Bobby Abbott. And I didn't care for her role, you know, the angry daughter son, but I did like the personality that Gordon-Levitt brings. And Gordon-Levitt's one of those child actors that actually made it, you know, in Hollywood as an adult. He fits the role, doesn't look like a super tough guy, but doesn't look like a child. Looks like a young man, a young detective in the role. And he played that pretty well. And I apologize. I don't have a picture of Kevin Bacon. Kevin Bacon's looking kind of dirt old too. He plays Captain Cade Grant, the antagonist in the movie. And I'm not giving anything away. You know, you quickly figure that one out. So first of all, a little history here for you. Oops, let me get this out of there. I'm ahead of the game. I don't know why it did that. Man, I guess I'm just a little too slow here. Man, it did it again. I know what it is. Okay, so first of all, Beverly Hills Cop came out in 1984. I was 17 going on 18 in 1984. It was the first film where Eddie Murphy starred as a Detroit detective. He's playing the same role. Kind of reminds me of Tom Cruise, you know. So this isn't how the real world works. Eddie Murphy would have been bleep can, he would have been fired, or he would have rose up the ranks, or he would have retired years ago. Only in Hollywood can you fast forward 30 years and be in the same spot successfully as you were 30 years ago. But as in the first movie, in this movie, he investigates, in this movie, he actually heads on back to Beverly Hills because he's concerned about his daughter, and he's trying to find his Judge Reinhold's character, Rosewood, who comes up missing. But the first movie earned $316 million worldwide. That was in 1984. Who knows how much that would be today? I don't know, $600, $700 million. Who knows? But Beverly Hills Cop 2 came out in 1987, 3 years later, and that earned $154 million. So that's a big, massive drop. Almost, that's about a 50% drop there in money. And then at that point, they should have left well enough alone, is my take. You know, just leave well enough alone, because the third one came out in 1994. 7 years later, 13 years, 10 years after the first one. And it was the worst of the lot. Earn $43 million. So you went from 316 to 43. So obviously a flop. I would imagine even back then that I don't know if it broke even, maybe combined with the DVD sales or the VHS sales back then, you know. So obviously that kind of killed the franchise. That's why they say it's been in hibernation. No, the franchise was dead. What it is right now, we're into retreads, you know, bringing back old movies or rebooting old movies. Hollywood has a problem right now. They're scared to put a lot of movie into something that's not well known. That's why you're seeing so many superhero movies, why James Bond always does well, you know, they produce retreads. So Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F, you know, it was probably a question mark if they wanted to do it for the big screen and how much they want to put into it. But Netflix smartly realized, hey, we can do this for Netflix. 41 million views the first week. Who knows what it has now? These numbers are hard to come by, these streaming numbers. 41 million views. That is phenomenal. I mean, for example, I'm going to talk about Warcraft. I think it had like 4 to 6 million views its first week in the top 10. So it just shows you the disparity. This is a bona fide hit. Here's what people don't know. There was an unaired pilot that was produced in 2013, but it didn't lead to a series. And Brandon T. Jackson played Axel's son, Aaron Foley, who follows in his father's footsteps. NYPD Blue had an unaired pilot that failed, where the lead character, Sipowicz, his son, is investigating the murder of Sipowicz, and that never went anywhere. And as a fan, and most fans, we were happy. We were completely happy about that. But if you're an old fan, here's why you want to watch it. You know, it has a high-speed chase through Beverly Hills. It brings back memories. It has Axel Foley's iconic red Chevy Nova going through the streets of Beverly Hills again, avoiding collisions, and it showcases the driving skills. Obviously, stuntman, but we're led to believe, you know, otherwise. You have your memories of the classic banana in the tailpipe. You know, he uses that to outwit bad guys. There's obviously the banter, old banter with friends. And that's what we look for. We want to see that magic. Sadly, the magic's not really there, only because they're just too old. But it still works well enough to bring back great memories. See, the thing with these movies that were big hits and they're done well enough is they just don't bring back memories of that movie. They bring back memories of the era. You know, so he reunited with obviously Billy Rosewood, which is Judge Reinhold. And so when I see Judge Reinhold, I think of Fast Times at Ridgemont High. and Phoebe Cates. You know, then he has Surge, which is a Bronson Pinchot. And in the 90s, he had a big hit called Perfect Strangers, where he played this accent-laden guy from somewhere in Greek or somewhere, some item. We didn't really know it because it was fictitious. So it brings back memories of that, those type of lifestyles, the culture back then. So, and that it does it well enough to where you're smiling and you're chuckling. A few scenes you're laughing, you know. It has a climatic showdown. It shows off Eddie Murphy's natural tendencies of what made him Eddie Murphy. I guess there's a dance off at the nightclub and they say that's pure Eddie Murphy charisma. I don't really remember that one in the movie. I watched the movie, so that one didn't really stick. But it was just an overall good feeling. It captured the essence of the franchise, but more importantly, it made us remember fondly that era. So if you're somebody who's 45 and older, who was running that era, whether you were a teenager or a young adult, or even an adult now, you know, you're in your 70s, you will enjoy this. Now, so the reviews have been similar too. You know, Roger Ebert's website, the late Roger Ebert, he calls it a shockingly entertaining diversion, praising Eddie Murphy's charm and the talented supporting cast, including Taylor Page, Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and Kevin Bacon. The website's correct. Kevin Bacon played a great bad guy with enough charm and wit to not be taken too seriously, because it's a comedy. It's more of a comedy than a drama, with some great action scenes, great chase scene, great helicopter scene. But Joseph Gordon-Levitt is wonderful. I mean, and there's a reference to one of the movies, and those of us have seen it, and if you remember what I talked about with how the three movies did, you'll quickly recognize it. There's another website called Joe Blow, really. You know, it highlights that while it's not especially original, and it's right, but then again, 95%, 98% of movies in Hollywood aren't original anymore. There's no originality. It's how well you can pull it off. You know, Matrix Resurrections that came out is streaming on Netflix right now. I haven't watched it. I saw the last one on the plane. I was like, oh my God, this is terrible. No wonder it bombed. But that's just a retread, say special effects. So movies today are pretty much retreads of what's made them great. You know, they rely too much on special effects and the superhero genre, and you can only go so far. There's not a lot of originality, and that's why I think a lot of movies are failing. Plus, they're woke, trying to send a message. And that's what I liked about this one. You know, let me finish the reviews here. Joe Blow highlights that while it's not especially original, the film satisfies by spending time with beloved characters and embracing an old school aesthetic. And he's absolutely correct. And this is what I didn't realize, but one reason I enjoyed it as well is the action scenes avoid CGI. And there's something about that. There's something, when I watch a movie from the 80s, I smile. I was like, yeah, that's when stunt people really had to earn their money, you know? And I remember talking to a friend who wasn't a stunt person but had met stunt people, and he was telling me how the cars are hollowed out, how they have two or three of the same cars, how they're budgeted per blow-up scene, or, you know, it's so much technicality involved in it in that era. IGN, which is a woke gaming site that has branched out to do like movie reviews, they describe it as highly watchable return to form for Eddie Murphy, which is funny. I would imagine at IGN, nobody there who's doing movie reviews was probably even alive. So how the hell do they know? But they say the tone is consistent with the original trilogy, and they're correct. Mixing comedy, action, and silky smooth synth riffs. The heat is definitely back on. You know, Glenn Frey's "The Heat Is On." I forgot about that. Rest in peace, Glenn. You know, and obviously everybody knows about Rotten Tomatoes, and the film currently holds, well, at the time, my notes are a couple weeks old. So much has happened this podcast is about a few days later than I wanted it to be. But on Rotten Tomatoes at the time, it held a 66% tomato meter score, and audiences gave it an 80% approval rating. And that's my take. Go with what the audience says. Critics are woke. They want wokeness out of everything. They want to applaud diversity, even if it's crappy diversity. When I say crappy diversity, miscasting, bad casting, as long as it's the right color in their eyes, ooh, great movie. You know, I want to be entertained. You know, look, Eddie Murphy's the lead black, I mean, the lead actor, he's black. I don't care. I just want to be entertained. That's Eddie Murphy. Eddie Murphy, who I watched growing up on Saturday Night Live, who made me laugh like a fool, bought his tapes, not CDs. Well, maybe CDs started to come out at the time. No, they hadn't. I can't remember. But you get my point. Old school. So it worked. You know. So my take, it was nostalgic vibes. You know, the film paid homage to the original trilogy. It did capture the 80s aesthetics, you know, the retro music, you know, the heat is on, the neon lights, the classic action sequences, no CGI. I loved it. It did take me back to those movies. And if you're new to the franchise, you wouldn't miss a beat neither. You wouldn't think like, well, that's an Easter egg or this or that. You wouldn't notice it because you wouldn't care because you're enjoying the movie. Again, no excessive CGI, and it's a refreshing throwback to traditional filmmaking and the new characters, adding fresh faces, specifically Joseph Gordon-Levitt. I thought he was great. If they do another sequel, I hope he's in it. You know, I think Judge Reinhold and Taggart, yeah, they ran their course. They could have a couple of cameos with a new one, his friends, maybe having a drink scene. He's asking for advice, but they're just too old. They're just too old. That was the only downside. It's kind of like you enjoy it, but you realize, okay, 30 years is too long. It should have been maybe 15, 20 years. I could still pull it off. They're just too old, you know. Eddie Murphy's like me. I look much younger than I really am. He still holds his youthful looks. I wonder if he had surgery or Botox, because even though he looks youthful, he looks different from when he looked back then, you know. And again, Reinhold and company, they did not age well, and they are a bit out of place in terms of the action scenes. Good, cute lines, funny lines. I was chuckling, but there are two old farts. Yeah, you know? And after the smell dissipates, you want them to, too. A little crass there, a little sailor crassness, you know. So my take is, how'd the character evolve? And when the first movies came out, he was making fun of the white cops, cracks. And back then, it was fun. They made it funny. You know, there was no anger, no hatred, no tribalism. And what I enjoyed about this one, he's gone from a wisecracking urban detective in Beverly Hills to he's like a straight-laced white bread world of friendship and family. What I'm saying is the two white guys are friends now. You know, it's not the white crack, the wisecracking. And that showed a maturity of the character. And it wasn't woke, you know, it was friends. There was nothing woke about it. And I really liked that. And there was also a cameo, you know, but it wasn't a Beverly Hills cameo. It was a Happy Gilmore cameo. And I won't tell you, Christopher McDonald was in it. And when I was watching, I was like, why is that guy so familiar? Why is he so familiar? And then when I read up online about, oh yeah. And they're making another Happy Gilmore movie, a sequel there as well. So I don't know what created this, why they did it. But according to the director, it was just some lighthearted fun. And I like Christopher McDonald. I always thought he should have been given his own type starring role, but you know, maybe he just wasn't good enough to carry it. I don't know. Or maybe they tried it and it failed. I don't know. But it's a watchable return to the Beverly Hills Cop universe, blending comedy, action, and nostalgia. And I do hope they do another one. All right, moving on. Let us move on to Warcraft. Warcraft is now on Netflix, a movie that came out in 2016. It's a great movie. Crappy ending because there has been no sequel, but it is a complete ending. It's kind of like a closed chapter. Like it's kind of like NYPD when it ended. You know, it ended with Sipowicz as the captain, and it. And life goes on, and you wanted more, but we didn't get it, and we're not going to get it, you know. And a hat tip to Screen Rant. I got quite a bit of information from there. Screen Rant is frustrating because the pop-ups, and it drives you nuts. And I hate the tip Screen Rant. Don't go over there because the pop-ups are murder. But I'm going to give them the hat tip there. The cast. Warcraft is Travis Fimmel, Paula Patton, Ben Foster, Dominique Cooper, Toby Cabell, Ben Schnetzar, and Clancy Brown. And Clancy Brown plays Blackhand, the Orc Chieftain, and he's all in CGI, you know, so you really can't tell. Now, Dominique Cooper, Travis Fimmel, Ben Foster, This was in 2016. At the time, they were bigger names, up and coming. They kind of peaked already. Not that they're bad actors or it's just, it's hard to be a superstar in Hollywood, you know? And then when you get a movie like this and they're counting on your superstarness to help it make money, and it doesn't make the money expected, that kind of dims you, you know? But Dominic Cooper did a great job on Preacher, an AMC series. I watched the first season, and it's just, today's series just get over the top sometimes. And they, I mean, fantasy, things like that. It's, we know it's fake, but you want levels of realism in there. If it's a regular human, you know, you want them to at least be a regular human within that fake world. You know, if they have superpowers, that's one thing. But, you know, Preacher got like that for me. Travis Fimmel played, I want to say Vikings or a Vikings type show. Same thing, first season. I just didn't care for it. I'm old fashioned. I like it when good guys win. You know, I'm an action adventure 80s type guy. And it's funny how that's kind of stuck with me. But the reason I bring this up is it's a great movie, and you can see it now. And it's a top 10 movie. I think it had like 4 to 6 million views when I was researching it its first week there. And it was a top 10 movie. The overview of the movie, if you're a gamer, it's a must-see. You know, some people complain, well, I really didn't stick to the Warcraft game. You know, I played Warcraft Battle.net. To me, that's the only time I played. I actually bought the Warcraft, the morph, you know, the one where you can go online and play. But those, I play because I wanted to play and get in touch with my nephew on my wife's side, and I can't do that. It's too time consuming. I have a life. I don't have 30 hours a week to build up a character in the world of Warcraft. But it's a $1 billion gaming industry, you know? And I brought up Clancy Brown's in it because we're going to talk about him in a bit too. But the overview of the movie, the film is set in the high fantasy world of Azeroth. And if you're a gamer and you're a Warcraft fan, you understand it, you know it. If you're not, it doesn't matter. It's just set in the fantasy world, and that's called Azeroth. And, you know, I'm giving you the overview, but just understand, the overview is just like any science fiction movie. You know, it's a setting, it's a place. And what's important is the conflicts. There's humans and orcs clash because the orcs are seeking a new home because they've kind of ate up theirs, used its resources up, and because of the evil that they bring with them, that kind of sucks and drains the life. They've got to move on and conquer another dimension, planet, whatever you want to call it. Some of the key figures deal with the king, the king, his protector, you know. And then you have the orc, the benevolent orc. Then you have the female orc, and those are your protagonists. It's magical. There's big battles, epic battles. It's a lot of political intrigue. It's just your classic science fantasy movie. And people don't realize these science fantasy is not just for children, for kids. There's a whole world, as I said, big battles and political intrigue. It's no different than Ben-Hur or Cleopatra from the 60s or The Matrix. You know, it's a world. There's a story. There's key figures. There's themes it explores. And this is what I love. I'm old school, you know. I have integrity. And I don't say that as prideful. I say it because I'm disappointed that more people don't have it, because we should all have enough integrity and honor to do what's right, but we don't. Most tend to do what benefits them, and then they rationalize it. I'm sorry. That's just the way our world is built right now. You know, and to give you the biggest example, in World War II, Hollywood, most of the big name stars left Hollywood to go serve in the world, in the war, World War II. Now, they use America, they enrich themselves, and they bitch about living in America, the politics about it, how the country's built. Man, you go live in a different country. Well, they probably could, and they'd live with the rich, so it wouldn't bother them. But they made their riches here off of this land, you know. So to me, honor, sacrifice, and unity, those are great storylines to have in movies so kids can learn what it means to have honor, what it means to make sacrifice, and what it means to unify as a people. It sounds corny, doesn't it? But I long for that America. That's what made us the greatest country in the world, and that's what gave you and me the opportunity to live the American dream. Right now, this generation, they have nothing. They own nothing. They take pride in nothing. They're 700-pound gorillas hiding behind a computer. So this movie kind of explores those things of honor, sacrifice, and unity, and I love it for that. I thought it was over-budgeted at $160 million. That's what it cost to make, especially in 2016, which is, what, 8 years ago? You know, but that's how much CGI cost back then, you know? So now I think a movie like that could be done cheaper. I'd love to see a sequel. Some of the issues with the movie, mixed reception. It received harsh criticism despite the popularity of the game. There wasn't a lot of support from Blizzard. Blizzard at the time had $1 billion product on its hand just through the games. So the movie was really secondary. Some thought it was a complex story, and it was, but they did it well. You know, they established two fictional worlds, the orc world and a human world. Several fantasy cultures, you know, some of the critics said it was too dense, made it confusing. Not really. I thought Paul Duncan, I think that was the director's name, or Duncan Jones, I'm sorry, Duncan Jones, he made it work, you know. The downside is you didn't really fall in love or hate the characters. Now, for a movie to really work, you have to have that. And maybe that's one reason it didn't make it. You kind of liked the characters, but you didn't fall in love with the characters. Or you did hate the main bad guy, but finding somebody to hate a lot easier than connecting with one of the protagonists. So you weren't as invested in it as you should have been or could have been. Now, the ending wasn't unresolved, but it was obviously an open ending to continue. But that specific adventure did have a beginning and an end, but it was open to another movie, which is what they were hoping for. So I guess I could agree it wasn't a conclusive ending, but it was an ending. It was start, end. You know, but there was a next chapter, you know. So there were some plot points that were unresolved, hinting at a sequel that obviously has not come and is likely never to come. There are two main positives. Strong visuals. The CGI holds up today. That's why you should watch it. I mean, look at the poster. You know, in fact, you've seen it enough, you know. But it's a great poster. And the CGI still hold well today. You know, and it had a terrific score, they say. I got to be honest. I don't really remember the score, but it was very pomp circumstance, very militaristic. Some of the music, bomb, 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 you know, that type stuff. So the critics gave it a 29%, but audiences gave it a 76%. Like I said, go with the audience. The critics, man, unless it's woke, unless it's artsy-fartsy. You know, I got in an argument with my film professor in college, you know, because I, you know, she says something about Woody and then the artsy farsies of the film noirs, and I raised my hand. Yes, what do you want, William? I was a non-traditional student, had served in the military, seen my time around the world, I was pragmatic, I knew what the real world was about. I said, look, movies were created for people to escape. That's what we want. We want to escape. We don't care about the artsy fartsy stuff. That enhances a movie, but that's not the reason we should like a movie. And she kind of disagreed with it. And I'm thinking, well, you're a freaking film professor at a community college. It was my first take. You know, I was going to the community college to get rid of my general courses. I didn't want to spend the money at a four-year college. I had done that once already. So I said, I'm going to get the community course out of the way. And then I transferred to the Cal State system. You know, I had to finish my 2 years out. But that really irked me. It's like, you know, movies are made to be enjoyed. They're an escape. And that's what this movie does. A couple of tidbits about the movie. Sam Raimi was supposed to direct it. He's of Spider-Man fame, of the Evil Dead fame, the original one, movies. And Duncan Jones took over. He had a passion for the game. He was a fan of the video game. He was eager to bring Azeroth to life. There was some disappointment when he did take over. He did not like the initial screenplay. It was very simplistic. And maybe he should have stuck with it. Because, as I said, some of the critics thought it was a little confusing. But he didn't like the simple good versus evil. Humans good, orcs bad. You know, that could have worked, too, that way. I thought what Jones did very well in terms of what my enjoyment. But it failed at the end of the day. You know, his alternative approach was more nuanced. You know, meaning more attention to those little details you don't realize, but that help you shape your opinion about it. It's a more nuanced perspective, emphasizing the heroes on both sides. And it worked for me. It was, I said benevolent orc, but it was just an orc who was pragmatic, who's like, He was like me. This and this is happening. Maybe we're not who we say we are, and we're not doing what's good or right. You know, I don't want to give it away, but it worked for me because of me. That's how I connected with him. I'm like, that's me. That's me. I'm the orc, you know? And but had they done Good versus Evil as they used to do in 50s, 60s, you know, and that really lets the audience know who to root for, you know? So it did not work financially. I thought it worked great for the story. And I got his side, but also support from Blizzard. Blizzard supported that vision. They're like, yeah, that's great. That's great. You know, because it created a common humanity in terms of uniting cultures, bringing them together. And that's where it left the door open for the sequel. I said uniting humanity, but at the end you saw where the plot was going. It was going to unite two different cultures, as we see here. In America, black, white, black, Latino, Latino, black, Latino, white, Asian, black. You know, we work hard, strive to unite, and that's kind of disappeared. We are being forced into tribes, and there's nothing good that comes, especially when you add up Latinos, whites, the Europeans, the Asians. You know, things are going to get ugly if we don't come together. And I pray to God we can come together, because my family consists of white to black, you know, straight to gay, dirt poor to well off, you know, so we got to come together. So I like that aspect of it. And again, it left the door open for a sequel we're probably never going to get. Ticket sales, the budget was 160 million. It grossed 47 million domestically. Wow, they were probably looking for at least 200 million here domestically. Foreign gross was 391 million. Now you have to remember, people are like, 391 million, William, it only cost 160 million and made 47 million. So that's 439 million. How can you say it didn't make money? Well, studios get a lower percentage of the ticket sales overseas, and the bulk of the money came from China. China gets the bulk of the sales over there. You know, so it was solid, but fell short of the $1 billion they were hoping it would gross. So it fell about 560 million short. You know, but it is the highest grossing movie based on a video game. But again, Blizzard itself is a $1 billion annual venture. So the movie wasn't a big priority for Blizzard. So, you know, I'm sure with marketing pushing it, I mean, they could have tie-ins of the game. They could have marketed it. I mean, you're talking about $1 billion game, worldwide fans. I just don't think they marketed it well. I don't think Blizzard did their job. You know, in fact, per Jones, Duncan Jones, Blizzard wasn't supportive of the movie, especially considering how long it took to materialize all the studio changes. It went from one studio, then the studio got bought out to another. So there was a lot of issues behind the scenes. And his theory of the failure is he believes there was an element of cynicism surrounding the film. Some of the relationship, he suggests that some of the relationships were strained due to significant others playing too much Warcraft. I don't get that. I think what he's trying to say, they wanted a certain type of Warcraft film, the fans did, and they didn't get it. I don't know. So those were his takes. At the end of the day, I think it held up to the lore of Warcraft from the Warcraft game I played. That was Battle.net. That was the second Warcraft. One fun note for everybody out there, Duncan Jones is the son of legendary rocker David Bowie. I did not know that until I started doing my research, you know. So all this said, why watch it? Fantasy world. You can immerse yourself in a high fantasy world of Azeroth if you're a Warcraft fan. It's filled with magic, epic battles, and intriguing characters. They are intriguing, from the king to his knight, you know, that protects him and the kingdom, to the knight's son, to the female orc, to the knight's sister, the king's wife, you know, to the enemy, to the benevolent orc, you know. So there are many intriguing characters. Oh, I'm sorry, I forgot one character, the mage, which is very important in the world of Warcraft. They're not the main mage, I'm not going to give that away, but the minor mage who is a protagonist there. Again, it's a visual spectacle. It really is. Impressive visuals. It brings the Warcraft world, the universe to life, and the cinematography, it's stunning. The CGI still holds up. Again, the score, you know, it's a nuanced story. It's not good versus evil. It is perceived as good versus evil on the surface, but the movie gets into the nuances as to that's not exactly as it seems, you know. So it's nostalgia for gamers. If you're a fan of Warcraft, again, the franchise, the adaptation offers a chance to revisit some of your familiar elements that you see in the game. And the biggest reason is damn enjoyable, and you'll feel as if you're in a Warcraft adventure. Now, many will disagree with me, but hey, you can. You know, I played the early iterations of Warcraft. Think DOS version. You know, that's how far back I go. And many don't feel it was faithful to the Morrigh, which is the massively multiplayer online role-playing game. And that could be true. Again, the last time I played it was a DOS version. Since then, between technology and adventures after adventures after adventures, it may have changed to where people don't feel connected. I did. So despite the lack of overall success, it's one of the best video game adaptions around. And if you have Netflix, obviously it's not free. You're paying for Netflix every month, but it's free on Netflix. The sequel, never say never, though. That's what I'm saying. You know, there's always hope for a sequel as the door isn't shut yet based on Jones and the fan interest. Again, it does have a 76% audience rating, and you have the success of Fallout and the lower cost of CGI. Never say never. Streaming has changed the landscape. Look, Beverly Hills Cop, Axel F. That cost like $150 million to make. And that was only a streaming release. Warcraft has a much larger worldwide audience. It's currently, again, a top 10 movie on Netflix, or was a couple weeks ago. It was 4.1 million views its first week. So there's revitalized interest, and there are new fans. It's been as high as number 2 on the Netflix's top 10. So, my take, you have Netflix, you want an escape from reality as movies were meant to be, check out Warcraft. All right, let's move on. There can only be one. There can only be one. Highlander. Who you are looking at is Christopher Lambert as Connor McLeod, the protagonist in the film Highlander. And an immortal. You know, there are other big characters here. You know, you have Sean Connery plays Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez. You know, Latinos, we're funny. You know, I have 2 birth certificates. One's Panamanian, one's American. The American has my name is William Del Pilar. The Panamanian birth certificate has my name is William Del Pilar Dominguez. I always joke around, William Del Pilar Dominguez Rodriguez Ramon Smith. I crack myself up. Okay. So you have Sean Connery plays Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez. And then you have the guy who stole the show, Clancy Brown, one of my favorite actors. I don't want to say favorite, but I always smile when I see him on the screen. I just like him. Everything he's done, I like. Clancy Brown plays the Kurgan, the last of an old Russian tribe. He is vicious. I mean, the guy just, I'm sorry, Clancy, I love you to death, boy, but with the right makeup, you could play the perfect neo-Nazi, the perfect bad guy. And he played Kurgan is not a neo-Nazi. He just has that white look, you know, at times. You know, there and there's a towards the end of the scene, his character changes a little bit in physical form. Nothing outrageous. I mean, just how he looks, and he's phenomenal. Clancy Brown stole the show. And then there's a Rock. Do I have Roxanne? I don't think so. No, I don't. So Kurgan, there's Roxanne Hart. She plays Brenda Wyatt. She's the love interest. You know, she was really insignificant. You know, your classic, the female plays the hero has to rescue her type role. How it would really be. I'm sorry. There's no 90-pound weakling's gonna, or no 90-pound woman dripping wet's gonna take the Kurgan. They're out. Period, end of story, you know. So you have Christopher Lambert, who back in the 80s and 90s was a successful leading man actor. he had his share of Greystoke, Highlander, A-list big movie releases, a lot of DVD releases, VHS releases. We played the leading man, quite a career. You know, I'm trying to think of an actor today. Were the ones I said, you know, the ones in Warcraft, you know. I'm trying to get back into the Warcraft. You know, Ben Foster, Dominic Cooper, Travis Fimmel. You know, actors that they had a few years span. Christopher Lambert had at least a 10-year span. And that's why I mentioned Clancy Brown. 2016, he plays Blackhand, the Orc Chieftain. In 1984, he played, here's Clancy Brown playing the antagonist in the movie. And he kind of stole the movie. Side note, I'm trying to remember exactly, but he said he was paid nothing for this. I mean, he was probably paid the working wages, but, you know, it's he was kind of screwed over based off royalties and things of that nature. But the reason I started out with Highlander, there can only be one. It's Henry Cavill is going to headline the Highlander reboot. And Highlander is a sword. It's a science fantasy. It's a fantasy. It's a sword and sorcery fantasy, you know. 1986, I said 84, but 1986 was the original film with Christopher Lambert as the immortal warrior Connor McLeod. The saga features epic battles. It's a vast mythology and a stellar cast, obviously, that has Sean Connery, Clancy Brown. I say stellar because he had a stellar performance, you know, and now it continues with Henry Cavill. This shot here that you're looking at Cavill is a shot from The Witcher. And this fight scene. You just go, oh my God, his fight scene. He has taken fight scenes to a new level. And the reason I say that, I mean, look at The Matrix. Look at a lot of these Chinese. They're wonderful, beautifully choreographed fight scenes, but they're kind of like dancing through them. It's kind of like, whoo, 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 whoo. There's no power. You know, there was a Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, I forget, they're cyborgs. You know, there were humans that turned into cyborgs. The one they did one years later. What was that called? I remember now. Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning. That was the first movie. Let me show you a picture of it. I do have that. It was with Scott Adkins. Scott Adkins has been in a lot of movies, Star Wars, Doctor Strange, John Wick 4. He's one of those guys who should be much bigger than he is, but he's the real deal. He's taken martial arts to another level. And Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning was the first one I saw. I was like, oh my God, they were vicious fight scenes. You're like, oh, you know. The final Matrix, or the first two Matrixes, maybe the first one was a little bit better, but the second and third ones, they were beautifully choreographed, but there was no power behind anything. It was like, they were just going through the motions. And it was obviously fake, but the CGI helped them make it look so good. Scott Adkins brings this violence to it, this physical violence that is so realistic at times. It's like, oh my God, you just feel the pain. Henry Cavill brought that to The Witcher, a bit choreographed, but they were vicious, violent sword fight scenes. So when I saw that he was going to headline the Highlander reboot, I was so excited, you know, because Highlander, it doesn't hold up as well. It's a cult classic, and I have a special fondness for it in my heart. Before I did doing this podcast, I went back to rewatch it. You can rewatch it on Pluto, and there's somewhere else you can rewatch it on for free. You know, it doesn't hold up. The acting's decent enough. The fight scene back then, CGI was exorbitantly expensive, and this was not a very high budgeted movie in that sense. But what made it so magical was Russell Mulcahy, the director, was an MTV director. So he brought all this, the neon lights, the bright colors. It was like a movie, a music movie, a video movie at times. Not the movie itself, but how some of their scenes were done with the coloring, the cinematography. So, and now all this continues with Henry Cavill. To me, arguably the best action hero of this generation. You know, and you're going to get a John Wick touch, which is a little depressing because he's another one of these choreographers. You know, the first John Wick was pretty good. The second one was okay. The third one, in terms of the choreography, where they were just moving through the scenes, wonderfully done. But it was better than The Matrix, more realistic in that sense, but nothing of what Scott Adkins brought to a Universal Soldier, Day of Reckoning. But I have high expectations, though, with Henry Cavill. Henry Cavill is not Keanu Reeves. Keanu Reeves is in his 50s. You know, there's so much you can do with a body like that. Henry Cavill is in his peak. He sat there and said, I'm leaving for training because I'm going to do Highlander. I'm like, whoa, he's leaving for more training? I mean, after The Witcher, most actors would have been, I'm good enough, not him. You know, so and the John Wick director, Chad Stahelski, you know, he did all four of John Wick films and he's going to bring his vision to it. And I expect an action packed movie. It's a reboot, promising an exhilarating cinematic experience. I said reboot, but it's not technically a reboot. They're going to try to create the canon from the old canon, but it's such a messed up universe, the Highlander universe, because at the end of the day, it's pretty much an open and closed movie. You're an immortal. At the end of the movie, there's only a handful of immortals left who are battling to be the final immortal. Thus, there can only be one, you know? So it's hard to create a universe out of that, you know? So again, the main actors in the original, Christopher Lambert played the protagonist, Connor McLeod. It's worth seeing. Clancy Brown stole the show playing the role of the Kurgan, and Sean Connery as Juan Sanchez Villalobos Ramirez. So here's a premise of the older movie, and they're going to try to take as much as they can out of this. This is going to be a bit more of a prequel, so you're probably not going to see the ending of the first movie in the Henry Cavill version, but in the premise is they're immortals. In the present day, they're immortal warriors secretly battling each other throughout the annals of history to the present. You know, they can only be killed by decapitation, and the less and less there are, it triggers something called the quickening, where they take every time they kill one another, it triggers the quickening. And that's where they take the energy of their defeated immortal enemy. You know, that's how I always considered an angel battle to be in my mind. You know, angels battling, you know, they defeat one angel, they suck up all of God's power that was given to that angel, you know. And Connor McLeod, he's the Highlander, he's Scottish. You know, he gets killed by the Kurgan early in the movie, and that triggers his immortality. He learns about the game through Sean Connery's character. Immortals can sense each other, and obviously some don't want to fight, so they just want to live their lives of immortality. Others seek them out because they want to be the last remaining one, because there's the prize, a mysterious and unimaginable gift. To be quite honest, I was let down at the end of the original movie. Is that it? You know? So this movie took place in New York City, the modern version, but there were flashbacks. That's what made it pretty cool, you know? And the prize awaits the victor. So the overall theme of the Highlander movie, which will be carried over with the Henry Cavill version, is it delves into immortality, the love, the loss, the burden of watching loved ones age. You know, my wife and I talk about this at times. You know, what happens when one of us goes? You know, we're like peas in a pod. We've been together for over 30 years. You can just imagine being an immortal. You know, I read there's a vampire series, and a couple of vampires in the series are just tired of living, a couple thousand years old, you know, just tired. And as you get older, you can kind of see that, you know. I get that, you know, because I believe there's a beginning, there's a middle, and there's an end. I am beginning the path of my end years, you know? So I kind of look back at things and I'm happy with what I have done in life. I've accomplished a lot to have been an average Joe, and I'm happy and content with that. But I want to, I still want more adventure, so I don't want to die, people. You know, don't get me wrong. But what made the movie great, it blends the past and present through flashbacks. It creates an entertaining narrative, and it spans different periods of time. I won't give it away, but there's this funny duel with Christopher Lambert's character, Connor McLeod. So it's a blend of genres. you know, blend of fantasy, action, historical drama, and science fiction. But unlike Assassin's Creed, the game, it doesn't try to create real history and revise fake history to make it real history. We all know it's fake. It does nothing of that sort. And I'm just teasing to my next episode where I have another update of Assassin's Creed Shadows. But what makes it a cool classic? Iconic soundtrack by Queen, including classics like Who Wants to Live Forever? And with Freddie Mercury catching AIDS, his passing, that song had its own meaning. Director Russell Mulcahy, he brought his music video background. It's a visually striking film. It doesn't hold up as well, but you can see for back then, it was visually striking. The memorable characters, specifically Clancy Brown playing Kurgan, a wild, crazy, unpredictable, and scary villain. You know, Sean Connery did wonderful playing Ramirez. He was more of the swordsman. You know, the working man's aristocrat. And Christopher Lambert played a great antagonist, a protagonist. You know, for its time, it was great sword fighting sequences and special effects. Nothing like it is today. Now, y'all are saying, well, what's the big deal, William? Here's the big deal. While it underperformed at the box office initially through home video releases, it made a lot of money, and it became a cult classic. It spawned four films, one animated film, two television series, an animated series, a web series, too many books to list, a comic book series, soundtracks, video games, even collectible card games. So there are a lot of fans. See, we look at things, if I haven't heard about it, what's the big deal? You can have millions and millions upon millions of fans, and the average Joe may not have heard of it. This was has created a bona fide universe. That's why they're going to try to, the reboot's going to try to be more of an extension, a carryover of all the elements to keep the truth, to keep the canon of everything that was created before it. Again, Clancy Brown stole the show. Intimidating presence, his physicality, his deep voice. It lent an imposing aura to the character. He was scary at the time. You know, his brutality and ruthlessness. He was a vicious, vile, evil character. He was a formidable adversary. You're like, dude, you don't want to fight him. You're going to lose. That's the persona he gave off. He was born in ancient Russia, part of a cruel tribe, violent past, battles, betrayals. And all this added depth to his villainy. You know, there was an iconic duel, the climatic battle, you know, and McCloud was everything you want in a hero, protecting of those who couldn't protect themselves, doing the honorable thing, making the right decisions, protecting those he wanted to, taking care of those he had to. You know, there's a scene in there that is critical to the theme of the movie, and I'm not going to give it away, but his portrayal, again, Clancy Brown, combined menace, history, and memorable moments. There's a couple of car scenes in there, but the Kurgan, to me, is one of cinema's most iconic villains. In the end, there can be only one. Highlander's combination of originality, style, music, and storytelling has allowed it to achieve a unique cinematic immortality. So, what makes Cavill the right choice? Physicality. Cavill's imposing presence, his chiseled physique. Today, you cannot be like Christopher Lambert. For leading men, have to be chiseled. They have to look the part. The role, he's got to look like the role of an immortal warrior. His portrayal of Superman in the DC universe demonstrates his ability to embody power and powerful characters. His swordsmanship, you know, as Geralt in The Witcher, oh my God, if you haven't seen it, you got Netflix, watch it just for those scenes. You know, his experience will enhance the film's sword fighting sequences. And that's why I'm so excited. And if you've seen The Witcher, you'll know the potential for the fight scenes will be greater and better than The Matrix or John Wick. You know, he has great fan appeal thanks to popular franchises. I say that with a question mark because he's had quite a few bombs too, you know. But his involvement will attract his base and hopefully existing fans of Highlander that are older, you know. And like I said, he's been in many buzz, so it's not a given. And obviously, Chad Stahelski, he's a world builder. I mean, John Wick, there's the Continental. It's already a series on Peacock. So he wants to build a world here. So with his Cavill's talent, Stahelski's direction, I think the reboot can be better. So what they're talking about is merging the old with the new. They're bringing in elements of the movies and the television shows to do a prequel type storyline for The Gathering. You know, where the final few gather and they battle it out. The filming is set to begin in January, this coming January 2025. It's set to release in 2026. There was just an update in the past few days, and I don't know why they say it's an update. You know, it's just clickbait, you know, because I knew they were already looking in spots to film in Scotland. So now they're saying, we're going to film in Scotland in January. That's kind of what I assumed, you know. And they plan on going deeper into the characters and the lore than the movies themselves did. The budget is $100 million. And that's awesome, which means you're only going to need $300 million to break even and to make a profit. So thus, they can possibly have a new franchise here. And I like that. They're not being greedy anymore. I mean, $260 million to make Indiana Jones with a Harrison Ford who was too old to be Indiana Jones, and they make it woke and pass it on to a woman who it's too fake half the scenes with her. You know, CGI's the other half. Yeah, just spend a lot of money for a bomb. The Marvel is the same way, you know. The Blue Beetle was more along the lines that was a low budget at $130 million. Didn't make its money back. It was woke. They were marketing it as woke, proudly marketing it as woke. Cavill's not going to have any of that. This movie is more than likely not to be woke. Going to be, I mean, look at the John Wick movies. They're not woke. Yeah. So Cavill is the only confirmed actor, but the reboot, I can say, will probably stay faithful to the overall premise of the franchise. You know, now, that said, it's not a great franchise because at the end, the first movie was beginning, middle, and end. You know, a final few immortals left. They're at the gathering, which isn't really a gathering, which kind of was a disappointment to me in the movie. And then there's a final battle for There Can Be Only One. So once that movie was done, anything else, they had to kind of rework the canon, and they reworked it into a mess. But it's still canon, so they're going to try to figure all that out. So while Cavill will elevate the role of Connor McLeod, sorry, Christopher Lambert, I loved you to death. You were one of my favorite actors in your time. But Henry Cavill, I think, can do so much more for this because of the physicality, the sword fighting, etc. The trick for Stahelski is to find the Kurgan, to find somebody who can exude that violence. I don't want somebody small. I don't want somebody. I want the big Russian Kurgan. Keep that lore going. Make him vile, evil. I guess the people who are woke will like that. But that's not what I'm referring to. Just make him, you know, keep it true to the character. Make him vile and evil. You know, I thought Mario Van Peebles did okay in the sequels, playing the bad guy. You know, by the end of the day, there was only one Kurgan. You know, so who can play and do justice to Kurgan? And who can play a working man's aristocrat in Sean Connery, as he did with Ramirez? That was an important role. And he was a mentor to the Highlander, you know. So those are two very important casting points or casting issues they're going to have to deal with. But Cavill's combination of physicality, swordsmanship, and star power makes him the ideal choice to breathe new life into this classic fantasy franchise. And there you have it, my friends. The Red, White, and Rude, episode 17. Again, if you like this video, and if you've noticed, I'm very anal. I go into detail. I give you the history, the lore, the backstory, everything that you need to know to enjoy this, to understand why you should watch it, why you shouldn't watch it. So I hope you enjoy that. As always, click like and hit share. Share it on your favorite platforms. Subscribe to us on YouTube, on Rumble. You know, for those who aren't aware, you can find this podcast as well as my other political podcast, Fired Up, our libertarian podcast, Free for All, our pure sports podcast. We have basketball, the Blind Side Blitz, and I mean that's football, the Blind Side Blitz, our basketball, the Buzzer Beaters. You know, and we are growing. We are growing. So check us out at grumblingsmedia.com as well as your favorite social media platform, whether it's Apple, Spotify, Pandora, Google Rumble, or YouTube. We are under the profile handle Grumblings Media. So, my friends, this is William Del Pilar. Until next time, this is the Red, White, and Rude.
Hey everybody, this is Big John from Grumblings Media, and I just want to say thank you for watching our content. If you want to support our efforts here at Grumblings Media, just smash the subscribe button right here, totally free, or just go ahead and consume more of our great content. Click either one of these two boxes.